All right, welcome back everyone to another episode of Time Out Talk. We're your host, Raphael Singer.
And Hunter Leon.
And first podcast of 2023. We're now in the third year of Time Out Talk. Excited to still be doing this. And as per usual, a lot to talk about, a lot of craziness in the NBA. And last night was an especially crazy night as we saw some absolutely insane historic stat lines across the league, which is wild because I feel like just last week we were saying that about Luka Doncic's performance, 60-point triple-double. So, Hunter, I want you to rate these four performances in recent history, in terms of impressiveness, right? So last night, Klay Thompson put up 54 points, 7 boards, on 21 for 39 field goal attempts, 10 for 21 from three, with only 2 free throws. Donovan Mitchell last night, 71 points, 8 rebounds, 11 assists, 22 of 34 field goals, 22 of 34 free throws as well. Or from or sorry, I don't know what I wrote there, but 20 of 25 from the free throw line. And then Devin Booker, a few seasons ago, as most people remember, put up 78 and 6 on 21 of 40 field goal percentage, 24 of 26 from the line. And then Luka, a few nights ago, 60, 21 and 10. 21 for 31 field goal percentage and 16 for 22 from the free throw line. So, Hunter, rank these four performances.
Yeah, in order of impressiveness, this might sound crazy. People might call this recency bias, but I honestly do think it's that Donovan Mitchell game is the most impressive game.
Easily,
Most
yeah.
points scored since Kobe Bryant, most combined points, including his assists, since Wilt Chamberlain's 100-point game.
Yeah.
Like that's really impressive. We're talking his 71 points plus his 11 assists combines to 99 points of offense created. That's just absolutely ridiculous. I mean, the one caveat to me in that game is that both teams scored like were like 130, 145 points. So when you're putting up 71 points, I mean that's like half your team's points, which is incredibly impressive. But when you compare that to like, let's say Kobe's 81-point game when his team has like 110 points, that's like a much more significant portion of your team's offense than 71 points. And that doesn't discredit Donovan Mitchell at all. I just think the league has gone to way more offense. But man, this is definitely the most impressive game. I mean, just the fact that it was also, an overtime win. He got hit like the it's kind of crazy. Him and Luka did the same thing with the free throw where they both hit it off and got the bucket to send the game to overtime, which is ridiculous because that's a shot that first of all takes a lot of skill to hit it off the board and get it to your teammates or yourself. And then just to make the shot is just crazy.
Whose free throw miss do you think was better in terms of like how they scored it afterwards?
Donovan, because I think that the Mavs got lucky.
You think?
I think the Mavs got very lucky that Luka was able to regain that ball because that should have been Nick's ball the way it hit off. But speaking of that game, I think that's the second most impressive game on here. I mean, enough said. We've talked about this Luka game. I mean, 60, 20, 10 has not been done in NBA history. I mean, just incredible performance. And then again, overtime win, just like the Dubs take a huge part in this. Then here's where it gets tricky for me. I'm definitely going to take the Devin Booker game here. But I also, actually, no, this is really tough for me because no disrespect to Devin Booker, but I'm going to have to take this Klay Thompson performance next. And my reasoning for that is for one, 2 of 2 from the free throw line, only taking 2 free throws, especially in the modern NBA where a lot of guys are getting to the line 10, between 10 and 20 times in these games and they're scoring that many points. It's very impressive to do this just strictly from the field. And also, it's Klay Thompson, a guy who has had a lot of trouble recently. Like if this were like Klay Thompson pre-injury, this definitely would not be better than the Devin Booker game to me. But just the story behind what gets Klay Thompson to this point is why I'm happy that he was able to get here and have a game like this without Steph, without Wiggins. He was able to carry this team. And then this is no disrespect to the Devin Booker game, but I'm gonna have to put that last simply because I think it has the least meaning of the three games.
Yeah, no, I fully agree with you there. I mean, I think my reasoning for why Klay's is third and why Booker's is fourth is a little different. I mean, we're looking at only one loss on this list, and that's Devin Booker's game against the
That's
Celtics.
true.
And they kept him in late after the game was already out of reach, just so he could run up his stats and get to 70. So I think this one is a little bit less meaningful than the other three, because obviously the other three resulted in wins. Also, if you just look at efficiency, while Klay's and the books are pretty much the same, like just the fact that Klay to do the his off pure jumpers, you know, pure footwork in the post, you know, pull up midi, all that sort of stuff, like very pure basketball. As you said, two free throws is like insane to do in the modern NBA. And then you look at Book, he had 26 free throws attempted, which is pretty wild. Yeah, so I gotta agree with you there. And that, just a little bit about Donovan Mitchell's performance. I mean, what an incredible thing we just saw last night. I mean, people have always thought that Kobe's 81 is pretty much going to go up there with Wilt's in terms of being like one of those untouchable stat lines. No one's ever going to surpass it. But with how talented the modern NBA is, with the pace that's played and with the prevalence of the three-point shot, I wouldn't be surprised if we see that broken in like the next couple of years, honestly. Like if someone goes for 85 in a game, you know, just with how high scoring these games are. I mean, look at the final stat line. I think the Cavs had like 145 points in a single game. Yes, it went to overtime, but still. Imagine if there was a couple more overtimes in there and Donovan Mitchell was still hot. He could have easily got 81.
And the thing is, there are teams that score 145 points in regulation. I mean, there have been definitely Brooklyn Nets games that go that high in scoring because, you know, both KD Curry can catch fire. I've definitely seen Wizards stat lines like that. I mean, I'm sure the Mavs have had games like that. A lot of teams have just gone with the idea of we are going to outshoot you and our defense is secondary. So there's going to be a lot more offense and the pace of that offense is just ridiculously fast.
And just like in terms of points created, because I think it's very easy to overlook those 11 assists. As you said, 199 points like generated off of either scoring or leading to an assist is the second most all time behind Wilt. Like, and that's just one shy of Wilt because he had 100 points, like, scored in a game. So to be so close to, like, literally breaking one of Wilt's unbreakable records is absurd. And I think that
– literally one free throw – one more free throw made away. Like, it's that close.
We're going to be talking about this Donovan Mitchell performance for a long time. It's definitely, like, an all-time performance and – yeah, it's very incredible to see this. I have another hypothetical, or I have a question to ask you. So if anyone, any NBA player, it would break Kobe's 81, who do you think it would be?
Ooh. That's really hard. I don't think it would be Luka because Luka is, for one, he looks to get his teammates involved to a large extent. And he's more of like a do all around kind of player than a pure scoring kind of player. Like in that sense that you're never going to see like that LeBron game where he's going to score 80 because he's just going to get his everybody else involved. If anybody, I think Donovan Mitchell might be a candidate again, if he's that 70 point game. I think Jason Tatum is another good candidate for that. I'm probably going to go with Tatum being the most likely, to be honest with you. I think his game, his team is designed for him to score the ball and play good defense, which is, I mean, the role he has on this team is very similar to the role that Kobe had.
Do you think it has to be a sort of guard that's going to like get these high scoring games? Because the only three players to score above 70 or above this century have been Kobe Bryant, Donovan Mitchell, and Devin Booker. And those are three shooting guards who also all coincidentally were drafted 13th overall, which I think is kind of a crazy coincidence.
Yeah, that is but, true.
Like, could you see a guy like Embiid going for 80 or something like that? Because he has these high scoring games. He leads the league in 40 plus point games the past three seasons. He's leading the league in scoring right now. Could you see him dropping 80 plus?
If it was going to be a big, it would be Embiid for sure. I mean, Giannis is also a candidate. Like, I mean, there's just so many guys that I feel like could do it. Of the, like, superstar quality players, the guys I would see not being able to do this are probably just Jokic and Luka. Those are the two guys to me that their game is not built to score like that. But I do think that we've returned to the era of, like, NBA big men in some sense that I feel like in the past century where Kobe Bryant – I mean, when Kobe Bryant did it, it was still dominated by big men. But when Devin Booker did it, it wasn't a big man league. Donovan Mitchell did it in the big man league. But I think most of the candidates, I mean, Embiid was the scoring title holder last year, and he's a big man for since Shaq to do that. First man to have 30 points a game as a center since Shaq. So I do think we're seeing this emergence of big men again. It's kind of weird to ask the question though to me, like, who do you think could be the one to break Kobe's record? Because I think there's so many guys who could do it that I think, like, just the capability, not saying that's going to happen, but like you were saying, I mean, games are just so high scoring now, so fast paced that it's bound to happen the way we're looking at it now.
One person who I think like you might initially think of that I don't think could do it just due to circumstances not in his own control is Steph. Because while Steph has literally all the offensive capabilities to do so, I think the fact is that Steve Kerr is too like pragmatic with his rotations in the sense where if Curry has like 50 and the Warriors are up big time in the third, he's going to take Curry out and probably sit him the rest of the game. He values the long-term health of his players and the overall I guess performance over the season over performing in one individual game. And so we've seen this where Steph is going on a crazy run and Curry or and Kerr just takes him out in the fourth quarter and doesn't let him play the whole quarter.
I don't know if you remember, but actually, there was a game a few years ago where Klay Thompson was on pace to break Kobe's record, and Steve Kerr pulled him in the third. I think he had 60 points in three quarters, and Steve Kerr just did not play him in the fourth at all.
Yeah, I mean we've seen that. I mean not only with Kerr and Curry, or sorry, Klay and Curry, but we also saw that with Harden. Harden had 60 and three quarters as well, and Mike D'Antoni at the time, who was coaching the Rockets, took him out. So we've seen this across the league, and so I think for one of these scoring records to be broken, you either have to be in like a really, really, really bad team where it doesn't matter, like the Phoenix Suns with Booker, or you have to be in a very close game, like we saw with these past three performances. But yeah, with the way the league is trending, I would not be surprised if Kobe's record gets broken. I don't think that Wilt's record will be touched anytime soon, though,
Yeah,
unless they
no.
make some drastic
I
moves.
think we might see a like combined offense put up be beaten, but definitely not points.
Oh yeah, I mean that's definitely could happen. I mean if even if it's like a, I think if Luka, if those were like 20 assists, more than 20 rebounds, that might have actually been above the record. So like that is definitely doable, and Luka proved that.
Yeah.
So I guess you wanted to talk about scoring across the league.
Yeah, so we've been talking about all these crazy games, these performances going on, and I just wanted to put this question to you. So, like, do you think the offense, just the skill, has gotten that much better in the past few years? Like, I mean, the emergence of this offense has probably been the past 2, 3 years. It has been very rapid to the point we're at now. Or do you think defense has just gotten worse and teams are focusing less on it? Or do you think it's a combination of both?
I actually think that this is just sort of the way it's always been. And let me explain. I think that, I think we've always had generational scorers, no matter the era of basketball you're looking at. Obviously, now we're playing at a much higher pace, and with how much the three-point shot has become important to the modern NBA, there's going to be a lot more higher scores. But I think we've always seen players like just put up ridiculous stat lines night in, night out. Just a few years back, we had Harden who like could average 50 a whole month. And yes, you could make the claim that that's due to the free throw rule that was changed subsequently. But guess what? Players found new ways to score, and now we see what like how many guys are averaging above 30 points per game. Like,
I think it's seven.
yeah, over five at least. So clearly, and like to talk about the players that are scoring above 20 or 25 points per game, like there's a massive number. And like this is not unique to this era of the NBA though. I mean like you don't have to go back too far to like the early 2000s when it was Kobe and T-Mac and all these scorers doing these kinds of things, and they were putting up ridiculous stat lines. So I just think that there's always going to be phenomenal scores, and good offense is always going to trump good defense. And yes, you could say that the quality of defense and the effort being put up on that side of the ball for the most part has decreased since like those early 2000s. But it's also differences in rules. You know, there's no more hand checking. The game is not as physical as it used to be. And so players adapt, players play differently. But I think, regardless of the era of basketball you're playing in, players are going to get buckets.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I think the style in which players are scoring now is also a lot harder to defend than the style that teams were trying to score before. A lot of teams before, mid-range, post, and very few threes. But now players are taking these step-back threes that probably at one point would have been considered a travel. They're taking, side faders that only a few players in the NBA did at one point. Like those were like the Michael Jordans, the Kobe Bryants, the Dirks. There were like three or four guys who could do that. Now it seems like every team has a guy who can score like that. I think just like these crazy bailout shots that players are like hoisting up and just making. I just think that the like you were saying, good offense will always beat good defense, and guys have just gotten more skilled at shooting the basketball. And I think that also comes with, the technology, just the availability of people to watch and learn basketball around the world. And that just is going to lead to better basketball players. And also the technology allowing people to play basketball and improve their game without like getting a coach. Like you don't have to pay for a coach to be able to like get really good at basketball. There's apps you can have on your phone to teach you certain things, or like just YouTube videos, like all these little things you can, like the one YouTube video I loved watching when I was younger to learn how to shoot my free throws was like this Steve Nash YouTube video on how he shoots his free throws. Like, I'm sure every basketball player now has watched that video at some point to learn how Steve Nash, had 90% from the free throw line. So it's like, I feel like those kinds of things are going to add up to players just being better at offense. And I really don't think nearly as much people are watching YouTube videos like that. People aren't as excited to watch, about the nuances of your defensive positioning. Like, you know what I mean? Like, kids aren't excited about
For
that. And
sure.
I don't think that leads to worse defense, but I don't think defense is improving. I just think it's stagnant compared to the offense, just increasing exponentially.
Fair enough. I also think that what's it called? You have, the increase of the 3-point shot really just leads to just an overall increase in the volume of scoring. Or at least like in the actual points scored. Because you go back to like a season like 2006, right? I was just curious. Most of these guys at the top of the list are all like predominantly scoring from the mid-range or getting to the basket. You have guys like Kobe Bryant, Allen Iverson, Gilbert Arenas, Dwayne Wade, Paul Pierce, Carmelo Anthony. These are all guys that thrive in the mid-range. And nowadays, you look at all the top scorers outside of maybe like Embiid and some of these big men, basically everybody is getting most of their baskets from the 3-point line. And it's been that way for I want to say like pretty much since Curry revolutionized the game.
2016.
And so in terms of like I think this is going to be the trend for, the near future unless something changes. I would love to see the NBA bring some more physicality back to the defense because I think that's a criticism a lot of people have about the modern NBA. They say, "Oh, the NBA is soft. They don't play defense." And while I think that those like criticisms are always very overblown and like exaggerated, I think that there is a little bit of truth to it in the sense that the effort and physicality is really not there as much. And especially if you compare it to something like college basketball, where teams are fighting like every single possession, because I think there's like a lot more on the line for like a individual game. There's definitely improvement that the NBA could make in that department.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you there.
Also, I wanted to say one thing. I think, we've all seen that video of Steve Nash, but it has not helped our free throw percentage significantly.
No, but I also play basketball once every week, so
Fair enough.
I want to move on to talk about the All-Star picks in general around the league. But All-Star voting has started, and hopefully we'll get the first wave of votes soon, just to see who's at the top of the list. I am very excited for that.
Predict, who do you think is going to be the number one most voted player?
LeBron. I just think it doesn't matter whether he is the best player or not. It's just the.
What about in the East, though? Because LeBron is kind of a no-brainer.
Ooh, that's hard. I think it might end up being Giannis.
Yeah, I
I
think
think
so.
I think international recognition. I think a combination of things will lead to Giannis being number one.
Agreed.
But yeah, let's start with the all-star guards in the West. I think it's really tough because there's a lot of guys who deserve to be in this conversation. But remember that only four guards get to be picked. And then between the guards and the forwards, I think it's four guards and six wings. Or is it
Yeah,
five? I think it's
I'm. I think
six wings
it's
and centers combined.
six forwards. Yeah.
Yeah. And then I think it's two random players outside of that.
I don't really know too much about the actual like composition of the teams, but in terms of the starters, because that I am very
Yeah,
familiar with.
there are two guard starters.
Yeah,
Okay.
two guard starters, three
So
forwards.
between these guys, tell me who are going to be your starters in the West for the guard positions, and tell me who do you think just isn't making the cut. We're taking four guys. The guys I'm going to list off are Steph Curry, Luka Doncic, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Damian Lillard, Devin Booker, and Ja Morant. Who do you think is not making the cut?
Oh, so I think okay, starters. This one is pretty obvious to me. It's Luka and Steph, and I think even though Steph has missed a lot of time, he's still playing like MVP candidate. And I think, just in terms of getting the votes, he's gonna easily have the second most votes in the West, if not the most votes. Like there is still a chance because Steph is one of the most popular players in the league, so he's for sure gonna be a starter. And then Luka, he is a lock no matter what. You
I
cannot
agree.
have him as a reserve. He's played incredible, and he's going to get a lot of that international vote as well. In terms of the remaining guards, this one is where it gets a little tougher because you can make a case for every single one of these guys. And I think it comes down to whether you value team success or not. And I think to a certain extent, you kind of have to. And so I think Ja Morant is a lock for sure. Like you have to have Ja in there. His team's, in the top three in the West, and he's played incredible, like a legitimate MVP candidate at times this year. So Ja is a lock. And then between Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Damian Lillard, and Devin Booker, this might just be my personal bias, but I would go Damian Lillard.
I would agree with you.
You could make a case for Devin Booker. I think Shai has the worst case because his team is doing the worst. But I think individually, Dame has played better than Devin Booker, and their teams are both comparably mid. So I would go Dame there.
I agree that Dame, I would take Dame as my third best player, to be honest with you, on that.
Really? Over Jaw?
Over Jaw, I think just he's looked so incredible. I mean, without him, we saw how bad and lost the Blazers looked. He really has a lot of value to that team. And I think a narrative not so much plays in the All-Stars as much, but the fact that when he came back, we weren't sure what he was going to look like. And he just came out of the gate like himself was pretty incredible to watch. And then, yeah, I have to take Ja here, but it's really hard for me not to have SGA. I mean, like you were saying, I think you have to value team success in All-Stars. But this man is one of the seven 30-point per game scorers in the league, and he's
Yeah.
not become an all-star. Like, that's
I
crazy.
mean, but we've seen this before. This is not like new to all-star stuff. Like when those Suns teams were terrible, Devin Booker was not an all-star, So, but he was putting up incredible stat lines night in, night out. And so I think this is just par for the course for NBA. So I
That's
think,
fair.
it's unfortunate, but eventually when this OKC Thunder team gets good, Shai's gonna get his flowers. So let's move on to these forwards. Who do you got? Give me three starters. Just give me a three starters because there's too many fours to kind of list off.
Yeah, let's just say the forwards that we're looking at are LeBron, Jokic, AD, Zion, and Paul George. My starters at this point now are gonna have to be Nikola Jokic, first lock for sure. He's having an MVP season again, arguably his best season yet. He's almost averaging a triple double. I think he's like 0.4 assists away from one. Then Zion Williamson is going to have to be my second lock. I mean, the two seed in the West, just incredible basketball, playing without Brandon Ingram for an extended period of time. And then my third forward is going to have to be LeBron James. I think after his, since he has turned 39, or sorry,
38, 38.
38, sorry, 38. Since he's turned 38, he has been on a tear, averaging like 46 points per game. Just looking like it's 2008 again. Like he's just like out there having fun. And I'm scared for his health a little bit. I want him to take a step back, but you cannot take LeBron out of this conversation. And he's definitely gonna if he doesn't have the most votes, he's going to be top two in the West. So he's definitely going to be a starter for and just the legacy there. There's no way they don't have him as a starter. Up until, I would say, his like birthday game, like that 50 or the 47 point performance, whatever it was, I would have had Anthony Davis up there. Even though he's been injured for a significant period of time, the way he was playing was making him look like an MVP candidate if he was on the track to stay for the long term. But now that we know he's going to be out for another week, 2 weeks maybe, I cannot in good conscience put Anthony Davis up there over LeBron James.
Yeah.
And I really like Paul George. He's definitely going to be one of the, coming off the bench. There's no way he's not an all-star. He's been playing great. This Clippers team has performed over what people expected without Kawhi Leonard. And they look like they're in a great position. So I think that Anthony Davis might just not even make the cut, honestly, as an all-star this year if he's going to be sitting out before the all-star game.
I mean, I think you underestimate how kind of weak the those sort of forwards are in the West. I mean, there's really not too many great ones, especially because, like, the historically great forwards in the West, like, what's it called? Kawhi Leonard barely played this year. So I think, like, you look at games played from Kawhi, he's played 16. AD's definitely played way more than 16. So I think if, you know,
actually, that's true. I'm looking at the West guards right now. Man, this...
It's kind of sorry.
The next best guy would be like Domantas Sabonis. You know, he's my guy. But I think he actually might be right that the 12 seed Lakers, like two all-stars starters or like just two all-stars.
Yeah, no, it's going to be like, pretty ridiculous.
The two teams with the two all-stars are going to be like representing the Boston Celtics, that, you know, number one team in their conference, former finalists, and then the 13 seed Lakers
fighting for that play-in spot, as you know they do.
Yeah,
no, it's pretty weak in the West.
But that I think I don't want to talk about the Lakers here, but that just shows how sorry we are as a franchise to have two players who can be in that top five in the West for their positions and still not be in the playoffs at all.
Oh yeah,
I would
just say one last thing in the West. I don't think Kawhi is going to be an all-star. I think
agree. I mean, he has not put up enough good performances. I mean, I think, but the way the Clippers have been ramping his season is not so he can be an all-star. You know, the Clippers very much target themselves to the playoffs, which has been to their detriment in some years. But they've been ramping up Kawhi in a way that I think is probably best for his health. So moving on to the East, let's talk about the guards over there. There's a lot of nice guards in the East, and I think it's going to be tough to decide. Let's talk about Kyrie, Jaylen Brown, Donovan Mitchell, Trae Young, James Harden, DeMar DeRozan, and Tyrese Haliburton. That's a lot of guys right there.
This is hard. This one.
Tell
is
me
really
who
hard.
Who are your two starters? Tell me that first.
Okay, I guess the only lock I see here is Donovan Mitchell for sure, because I think he's played phenomenally, like, so good for the Cavs. Not even talking about that 71 or yeah, that 70 plus or 71 point performance last night. I mean, just night in, night out, he's been the best player on the court for the Cavs. Easily, in my opinion, I think the best guard in the East. Phenomenal player, just on all three levels, just doing it all for the Cavs offensively. So I think he's a lock for sure. And then the other one, I'm between Jaylen Brown and Kyrie, because I think Kyrie's been playing incredibly as of late. He did miss a lot of time in the beginning of the season. But the Nets, you know, 12-game win streak, they're right behind the Celtics in terms of standings. And Kyrie's looked phenomenal in all these games, really a big part of how they've been so dominant on this win streak. But Jaylen Brown, you know, he's been also great too. But I don't know. I think Tatum has really been like pretty clearly the number one guy for the Celtics this year. Whereas between KD and Kyrie, they've kind of alternated when they've played. Like sometimes Kyrie looks like the best guy out there, other times KD, where I think it's been more definitively Tatum out there. So I think with that reasoning, I'm going to go Kyrie and Mitchell.
Interesting. Because I think of all the teams in the NBA entirely, I think the two teams most deserving to have two all-star starters are the Nets and the Celtics, which is really tough because only one of them is going to get that.
Yeah.
So Donovan Mitchell is definitely a lock. I would say Trae Young would be a lock, but his team has not been winning. It's been a very disappointing season. He started really slow. He's ramped it up, and he's averaging 28 and 10 now, which is like real Trae Young numbers. But just his team positioning is not enough to put him there. I'm probably going to have to go Jaylen Brown on this one. I think seeding matters a little bit here. I think just the he's been a very integral part of their system. And I think that the Celtics have a slightly better overall team, but the efficiency that Jaylen Brown has had this year is, I think, slightly better than Kyrie Irving. So I'm going to take Jaylen Brown, but I think it's really interchangeable. I wouldn't be mad at either one.
Yeah, no, it's really tight here in the East. And I think it's going to be interesting to see which team between the Celtics and the Nets ends up getting two all-star starters, because, you know, both of these teams have very, very popular players too. Like, I think KD is usually like the number like one or number two guy in the East. And so let's actually move on. Let's talk about that. Let's talk about the forwards.
We didn't get the bench for the
West. Okay. I guess we could do that. Okay. So between these, like the remaining players, I guess for me, cause I got Kyrie starting, Brown is for sure a lock. I guess I'd have Trae Young.
Do you really?
No.
Just to remind everyone of the guys left on this list, we're going to have Trae Young, James Harden, DeMar DeRozan, Tyrese Haliburton. And we didn't talk about before, but I think a guy we need to include is Jalen Brunson.
He's a legitimate guy who has to be in that conversation. This is hard because, like, are you going to – I feel like Tyrese Haliburton has got to make it onto this All-Star team. He's leading the league in assists right now. He's actually going insane.
The Pacers are a good team, too. It's not like they're disappointing. I think they're the top six seed.
Yeah, and he's putting up 20 and 10. And like leading the league in assists, like legitimately a great player. This is so hard. Because I feel like Harden has missed a lot of time. I feel like I gotta exclude him.
Harden, I mean, Tyrese Haliburton is playing better basketball, like less turnovers, but James Harden's also averaging 22, 11, and 6.
Yeah, but how many games has he played?
That's a good question.
Let's see.
Let me check.
Because I feel like he's missed a lot of games. Harden, because Halliburton's played 36, right? And Harden has played 21. So I think that matters. You know, missing 15 games is a significant amount of time.
That's true.
So then I don't think DeMar is going to make it, unfortunately. I think he's played really, really well, but unfortunately, I think that the Bulls just are not good this year.
I think DeMar and Jalen Brunson are the two guys definitely not making it.
Yeah, so honestly, it's like you got to pick three out of Brown, Trey, Harden, and Haliburton. And I think of those four, I'm going to go Brown, Haliburton, and Trae Young.
Actually, wow, taking James Harden out of that conversation is really
Dude. No, okay, because okay, no,
he's having such a good bounce back.
Yeah, no, seriously, I'll have to go take out Trey, put in Harden, because I forgot how good the Sixers have been this year.
So. I agree. I think I'm taking out Trae Young simply for the lack of efficiency to start the season. I mean, he's still shooting like sub league average from three, which is crazy for Trae Young, a guy who's taking a massive volume threes. I think the team disappointment is another issue. Like, of all these teams, Harden has been impressive, Brown has been impressive, Haliburton has been impressive, and Trae Young has been, it's not like he hasn't put up good numbers, but just like not what you expect of him. So I'm gonna have to take Trae Young out of this all-star pick, but that's crazy too. I mean, the guards are just so talented in both conferences that we're taking out guys like Devin Booker, you know, Trae Young, Trey Gilgeous, you know, like it's really tough this year.
Yeah, guys who, if they were like on a winning team, would be in MVP conversations, which is crazy.
Yeah. But
let's go to, I think, the tightest race of like of ever, all of them. It's who is going to start in the East for the forwards. Because check this out, you got to pick three out of these four, right? Got to pick three out of Embiid, Giannis, Tatum, and KD.
It's impossible. It's literally impossible. They're all equivalent. They're all MVP caliber. All of them are in the MVP conversation.
So let's use process of elimination and let's get the three. somehow.
Man, well, my damn, I'm probably gonna just have to go based on standings. That's my only way of determining the difference between these teams. And that means between all these guys that, well, that means that KD's safe. That means that, okay, I guess Philly, it has to be Embiid. Embiid's the one out.
You're gonna take the scoring leader, the guy who's leading the NBA.
I know, it's crazy.
On a
it's
playoff
crazy.
Team out it's, of the list.
And they're all top five seeds. It's not like any of them are on bad teams.
Okay, rank them 1 through 4, I guess, in terms of like locks.
Giannis has to be my number one. Every time. I think the value he's brought, the fact that Chris Middleton hasn't really been playing, that's taken him to that number one for me. Man, it's so hard, but I'm going to have to go KD second. I think that 13-game winning streak that they're on, the value he brings to his team, the most efficient scoring season he's had of his career. If you look like around the like scoring chart, what he's averaging from the field is ridiculous. Like he's averaging 80% from the paint, which he's averaging 60% from like, I think it was like the corners of the box. He's averaging like 55% from mid range. He's like way above league average and all those things, which is crazy. Most efficient season of his career, least free throws attempted in his career. So just that has to be it for me at number two. And then it's so tough. I mean, between Tatum and Embiid, like you were saying, Tatum is clearly leading this Celtics team, and they are the number one seed just in the entire league. Man, Embiid's just the odd guy out for me, which is ridiculous.
It's tough. It's really tough when you have a literal, like a genuine MVP candidate. Like we will be talking about him as a favorite to win MVP.
Which is so unfair too, because he was supposed to be MVP last year too. Like he really wanted it. Like, you know, I'm not saying Jokic didn't deserve it, but I feel like he thought it was his, you know, he got that scoring title and he was like, okay, it's mine. Jokic gets it. And then could you imagine if he has to come off the bench in the All-Star game? Like that's just for, I'm sure that would piss him off.
Oh yeah. No, definitely.
But I feel like any of these four guys would be pissed off if they had to come off the bench in the All-Star game. And then, like, they have to be – I mean, all the starters deserve to be starters. But, man, that's just crazy. I could not imagine Embiid sitting on the bench next to Tyrese Halliburton just, like, shaking his head.
And, like, maybe Kyle Kuzma.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I really don't – would not want this to happen. Like,
wait, you don't not want this to happen?
No, I don't want this to happen. Okay. No one should get injured. But I don't see any way that – like some of these guys not making an all-star team don't deserve to be there. Like there's so many guys who just deserve to be on the all-star team. I feel like if we had some injury subs, it would like make it a little more fair.
Yeah. I mean, definitely always going
to
be.
Because that's what's going to happen with AD. I mean, at this rate, he might not make it to February.
Maybe Embiid can start in the West. Right? Maybe they could Philly can trade him just for the all-star game and then put him right back. Like a little loan, you know? Maybe to the Lakers. I think you know that would
we could use a loan.
Yeah, we'll loan out one of our star players, Austin Reaves. He can go to Philly and help them out.
exchange for Joel Embiid and James Harden.
Yeah, that sounds fair to me. But yeah, I guess like the rest of the forwards in the East, like guys like Siakam, Randall, Butler, Kuz, they're probably gonna make it just because like you need more guys to fill up the team.
No, but who do you think at six guys total, who do you think are the other three or the other two? Because those four are definitely locked. Embiid, Giannis, Tatum, KD are locked. So who are you taking between Siakam, Randall, Butler, and Kyle Kuzma?
Siakam, I think, is definitely a lock. He's actually had a very underrated season. He's played very well. The Raptors have been pretty trash, so maybe that would affect it. But,
I was going to say the Raptors are the 12 seed.
Yeah, so maybe instead of that, I'm going to go with maybe Bam. I think Bam has had a pretty good season, actually, like another underrated guy that doesn't really get talked about much. But I think Bam, he's also missed time.
Yeah.
It's one of either Bam or Jimmy, I think. Well, the Heat deserves
it. It would probably be Jimmy.
Yeah, probably.
So I think Jimmy's definitely there. And I think maybe Julius Randle.
Maybe. I mean, I don't know how I feel about that.
It's crazy the drop off between the starters and the bench guys in this East forwards list.
Oh yeah, no, it's kind of wild.
Oh my god, I can't imagine Embiid sitting there next to like Julius Randle being like, "This is who you think I play with? This is who you think?"
But I mean, you look at the numbers. I mean, Julius Randle is actually putting up 24 and 10.
No, I think he deserves to be there, but still, I think there's just a crazy drop off.
Yeah, definitely like a wild, wild decrease in like, you know.
Randle and Butler, I think, are the two guys who deserve it. I think
okay,
the
that's
seeding
fair.
Of the Wizards and the Raptors are the two teams that just does not let them be in this conversation. But
yeah, okay, that's definitely fair.
Yeah, I want to move on and talk about some of just the teams who have been playing well. And just like, I want to highlight this fan base. I've been seeing like some highlight clips of the fans going crazy. Talking about the Sacramento Kings. Have you seen all those beam memes?
Yeah, like the beam team.
Yeah, beam team. I feel like they have something cool going on in Sacramento for sure. They're building. Build on something. Not happy as a Laker fan, but just happy as an NBA fan that they have something to root about.
Mm-hmm.
This team's looking pretty solid, man. I mean, we're talking 19 and 16, 5 seed in the West. They've just been playing well. De'Aaron Fox, DeMontis Sabonis, Kevin Huerter has been such a star for them. He's been great.
Malik Monk, you know, from
Malik
Laker.
Monk, yep. Their rookie, Keegan Murray, has been doing great for them.
Mm-hmm.
They're just looking like a really solid team. I want to ask you or propose this question. Do you think they won their side of the Halliburton deal? It looked like at first the Pacers won this like it was a steal. But now seeing what the Kings have been doing this season so far, do we at least have to say this trade's even?
Yeah, I think this is more less of a like winning or losing trade and more of like a win-win kind of thing. Because I think, you know, the Kings realize that they have a lot of guards. You know, they have a lot of guys. They have De'Aaron Fox. They have Tyrese. And both of those guys.
Maybe on Mitchell.
Yeah, so I'm saying, like, both those guys have their ball in their hands. And then they also drafted Davion Mitchell. And so, you know, there was not enough room on this team for the both of them to really thrive and to, like, flourish as players. And, you know, De'Aaron Fox has been having a very good season, 23, like, 6-5 pretty much. On pretty good efficiency too. And obviously the Kings are doing really well. And so you have to say they made a decent decision because bringing in DeMontis Sabonis, they fit a lot better, you know, Sabonis and Fox than Sabonis or than Fox and Halliburton, just because they complement each other's play styles a lot more. And so I think you have to look at this with how well the Pacers are doing, how well the Kings are doing as a more of a win-win kind of trade than one team losing, one team winning.
Yeah, but do you think that they could have any impact in the playoffs, or do you think this is the kind of team that is just exiting in the first round?
Yeah, this is a team that can win maybe one game, like a, you know, a home game, like maybe they go down 0-2 in a series, battle back, make it 2-1, and then gentlemen sweep out of the playoffs. I don't think they're going to end the season at like the 5 seed. I think they even might be a play-in team, to be honest. I think I really like the Kings. I think they bring a lot of energy, and I love to see how the sort of vibe has shifted in Sacramento. I think the beam is a great sort of uniting factor, and I love what Mike Brown has done with this team. Really, really changed the culture around there to one where it's like, guys, we can really win. We can make the playoffs, etc. But yeah, in terms of making the playoffs, I think if they do it, it'd be incredible, but they're not going to do anything in it. But I think it's very possible that they just miss it entirely in a heartbreaking loss in the play-in or something like that.
Yeah, I agree. And one thing that Tyrese Halliburton talked about after he left the Kings, which I think they've done a really good job of fixing, is he said when he got to the Pacers, he felt like there was a direction, like something they were trying to build, a culture, and that was missing in Sacramento, even though he loved being there. And like you were saying, Mike Brown fixed those issues, and the Kings for once have done something other than hire Luke Walton. That was like the biggest mistake ever.
Yeah, not sure what they saw in Luke Walton to hire him, but you know, glad they're moving in a different direction from there.
Yeah.
So yeah, I guess let's talk about the last thing I want to talk about here is, I don't know if you caught this. I mean, because it was the game that Clay had 54 in.
Yeah,
were you able to watch this game?
I did. I saw the second half.
Okay, so this was like also, in my opinion, a contention for game of the year. It was such a great game going back and forth. We saw great performances from both sides. We've already talked about the Warriors quite a bit on this podcast and how they've looked. I think they're on a five game win streak without Steph and without Wiggins. So, I mean, who have been the biggest guys to step up in your opinion for the Warriors?
Really strangely enough, it's not the guys you would name. Like, they're not household names. Guys like Ty Jerome have been really stepping up for this team. The young guys have been stepping up. Kuminga has been great for them. Wiseman's still not great, just underwhelming for him. But Poole has just, really stepped in the role he was supposed to be, like, the star for them when Steph is gone.
I disagree with that actually. I think Poole, he's been good, but I think he's made a lot of mistakes. And I think he
I
has.
agree he's made mistakes, but I'm saying he's done what he's supposed to. I'm not saying he's like outshowing his teammates, but he's done his job.
Sure, but I mean, like, just look at the assist to turnover ratio. He's got like 30 assists in during the streak and like 50 turnovers. And you saw even in this game how like I think it was the end of what, the first OT. Instead of finding the red hot Klay Thompson, he tries to be the hero and go for a shot. He got blocked by Trae Young. Do you know how hard it is to get blocked by a guy who's 5'11 and plays no defense? So,
Yeah,
yeah,
that's
get the
true.
hero.
I mean, I think there's some bad decision making in there that comes with being young. But I also think that the Warriors' style of basketball is a very high turnover style of basketball. Tons of ball movement, just tons of just stuff going on at once, and it can be really hard for these young guys to n shave down some of these turnovers that are unforced because of how fast the system is. And like, I think the Warriors are the team averaging the highest turnovers per game, or like they're in the top five teams with turnovers per game. So I think that's just par for the course with this team. But the role players have really stepped up. And I think my brother has talked about this a lot because he's a Warriors fan. This Steph and Wiggins being out has been a big positive for this Warriors because when they do come back, they'll have the real role players. Because before, what was happening was they had their stars, they had Wiggins, they had Steph, they had Klay. But the role players had no real direction, and they were confused. They were not great. But now these role players have been forced into positions where they have to play good basketball and they have to try and win games without their stars, and they've found an identity amongst themselves without having to rely on their stars.
Yeah, no, I agree with you there. I think it's been good to see guys like, Kuminga, Moody have to step up. Even guys like Ty Jerome, as you were saying, like guys who are not even like
Dante DiVincenzo has been
Anthony
good.
Lamb has been
Anthony Lamb.
all right for them, So I mean, we can't discredit Klay Thompson. He's a guy who we've criticized a lot in this podcast, but obviously 54 last night. He had 31 against the Blazers, 29 against the Hornets, 24. So he's been stepping up and really finding his form again, which is great to see. And so when Steph and Wiggins come back, as you said, like Warriors are going to be looking really good. So I want to ask you, Hunter, before we move on to talking about the Hawks, predict where you think this Warriors team is going to finish the year in terms of standings.
Ooh, that's hard. I really did love this Warriors team coming in this year. I had them, I think, at like the two or three seed. I was
Yeah.
really high on them. But now seeing just the troubles they've had with their bench unit, but they are improving a lot. I'm gonna go ahead and settle them as the four seed.
Yeah, honestly, I'm gonna say the same. I think that the Nuggets, I think, are gonna be better. The Grizzlies and
The
the Pelicans.
Pelicans.
I think honestly, those standings are gonna be fine. I think we might even end up seeing a Warriors Mavericks first round.
Or a Warriors, it could be Warriors Clippers. I think Mavs might fall a little more. I think as the reliance on Luka increases after these games, I think we might see a little bit of a crash.
We could definitely see that could definitely be a possibility.
But one more thing I want to talk about with this Warriors team is just Klay Thompson. You mentioned his incredible streak of games.
Yeah.
I really hope that he can return to the Klay Thompson that we once saw pre-injury, but in all likelihood, I think what's going to end up happening is that, like, he's just going to have a stretch and then return to maybe a little better than what he was doing before. But I think we're going to get these games out of him once every 15, 20 games instead of once every five games, like we once saw, which is really unfortunate. I think he has it in him on any given night, but I just don't think it's going to come out as often as it used to.
Yeah, and I mean, honestly, I think it's about time we retire that whole like Klay Thompson of old thing. We just got to accept who he is now and realize that he's a different player. And, you know, he still is like a good player and he's going to
Still
have
has a
those
lot of value.
flashes and a lot of value, but he's not an all-star anymore. And we just got to accept him for who he is. So let's keep going. Talk about the Hawks. Last topic I want to talk about today. So the Hawks obviously lost that game in double OT. They've been struggling this season. I mean, right now they're 17-20, the ninth seed in the East. This is a team that just 2 years ago was, you know, a few games away from the NBA Finals. And here they are, you know, turmoil in the coaching staff, in the front office. You know, there's talk about them blowing it up. Obviously, we had those rumors that we talked about last time about Trae Young maybe wanting out, and if he went to a team like the Heat. And so I guess like what has been disappointing for you from the Hawks? Do you think they should try to blow this up or make some changes? Like, what would you sort of prescribe if you're a doctor for the Atlanta Hawks?
Man, that's a really hard situation because I think there have been a few guys who've been really underwhelming for them. One of them being John Collins. John Collins has been shooting, I think, like 20 something percent from three, like low tw mid to low 20s. A guy who historically was at least a league average 3-point shooter. He just hasn't done what he's supposed to. I mean, he's averaging 13 points and 8 boards per game, which is not what you want out of a guy who is once putting up probably like 18 and 10. And I mean, it's not like he's old, he's 25 years old. So I really don't know what, like, it's hard because they lost a lot of their role players from last year. They lost Kevin Huerter. And they lost some of that identity when they got rid of those role players. I went and I saw some of the Hawks in person last year. And one thing I noticed that I think isn't talked about a lot is how much they have these like really great scoring role players who give a lot of get drag a lot of attention. Like Danilo Gallinari, when he was there, just incredible. I mean, when I saw him play, he had got like 30 points in the game. Just had so much attention. He had another guy like Kevin Huerter coming in, lights out from three, drags a lot of attention. But then when you take some of those guys away who are really good at scoring and you try to trade out them for some defense, it leads to like just this massive decrease in 3-point efficiency from a guy like Trae Young, who's now the sole focus, a guy like John Collins, who has no help. I mean, Clint Capella hasn't been playing. So I don't know that they need to blow it up, but I just think they need to return to what was working, which is like just try to focus on that offense, try to get some shooters again. I mean, they're missing that for sure. And you know, slumps come and go. I think Trae Young is heating up again. And John Collins could return to himself. I mean, it's not like he's going to shoot 21% from three for his whole career. So he can get back to where he was. But I think mainly it's those role players, those shooters that they're missing.
Yeah, I think, I mean, you can't understate how disappointing John Collins has been, not only with his efficiency, but with his just output and his production. I personally am of the belief that, sorry, excuse me, that John Collins is a piece that can be moved on this team. I think that, you know, if you have, I think Trey, DeJounte, and Clint Capella have all been like exactly what we expect from them, if not more. Like DeJounte and Trey, that fit has been great. Clint Capella has at times looked like the best player on this team. And I think that John Collins is kind of the odd man out. Where if you want to move him and get some good quality like role players, because as you said, like the role players are really, really important in this team. Because who is Trae Young kicking out to? Who is DeJounte finding, you know, in those pick and rolls and stuff like that? It's got to be the shooters, right? And
And
when you're shooting,
Bogdanovich has been good for them too.
he's been good for them for sure. But like, who else do they have? I mean, when you're relying on production from, I don't know, DeAndre Hunter, who yes is a good player, or you know, it's once you start like going down the bench, it gets to be a little bit, I don't know, a little bit shaky. I think AJ Griffin, the rookie, has been very solid, but you know, you can't rely on big production from a rookie. So I think that this might also be a coaching issue. You know, there's been talk of Nate McMillan maybe needing to part ways. And so what do you think? Do you think this is more of a rot? Like, would you rather see Nate McMillan fired or John Collins traded?
We've seen that Nate McMillan has worked. His system got them to the conference finals against the Milwaukee Bucks. I mean, there were a lot of things that got them there, a lot of injuries, you know, the Sixers falling apart and all that. But I still think that what he did is can't be understated. He had a lot of value. And I'd like to see what he could do with a piece like John Collins being moved and maybe getting a better stretch for or just other guys who can shoot the ball, maybe three, just a general 3-and-D guy. So I think that's very possible. And then if that still doesn't work, then we could be talking about the possibility of firing Nate McMillan. But I wouldn't be so soon as to do that right now.
That's fair enough. I mean, I just don't want to, like, to those who are of the camp that Nate McMillan should be fired, you can't, like, give too much credit to past results. I mean, actually, you can, but as we've seen historically, like, I'm thinking of the Lakers right now. Frank Vogel won a championship with the Los Angeles Lakers and, you know, was subsequently fired a couple seasons later. Even though, I guess that was because he was given all new talent to work with and it just didn't pan out.
Yeah, I was going to say, he also had a lot of time.
That's fair. It
didn't pan out. He was given opportunity.
Yeah.
He was given opportunity. He was given changes. And I wouldn't say that Nate McMillan has been given that opportunity.
That's fair. That's certainly fair. So I guess on that point, this is a great way to end the first podcast of 2023. Looking forward to another great year. You know, we're ramping up to the All-Star game, which should be very exciting. And hopefully by next episode, we'll have some of those first wave of votes. See who are going to be the surprises this year, because there are always some joke candidates. You know, Alex Caruso has been up there. You know, before it was Zaza Pachulia. You know, he got on the board.
Yeah.
And so I'm excited to see that. And
next episode, we'll both be back at our respective colleges.
Yep, should be good. So on that note, thank you all so much for listening, and we will see you all next week. Take care. Bye-bye.